Bards FM podcast. My name is Scott Kesterson, and you're listening to a conversation with Dr. Jim Meehan.
This war is real. Fighting is everything. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Tempt not the righteous man to draw his sword. Conviction, righteousness, ruthlessness. To understand tolerance, you have to understand the line of intolerance. War is the teacher, soldiers are the students. They become the bards of war.
Good evening, patriots. Well, tonight we're going to have a great interview with Dr. Jim Meehan, who is another intellectual powerhouse and fighter in this war against big pharma and the destruction of humanity through the injection. His knowledge is immense and his passion is incredible and his love of Christ is immense in all that he does. So you'll enjoy that and we'll get to that in just a minute. I want to highlight that from the 26th to the 29th of August, we are having Bards Fest in St. Charles, Missouri. And on the 27th, we are having Mike Lindell speak. And on that day, we're going to celebrate the Slipper Revolution. This is a chance for patriots to get up and to really turn evil into good, using our dollars as a weapon to support and celebrate the success of taking back the terrain of economic dominance. The cancel culture has taken away $65 million away from MyPillow and Mike Lindell, all because he has a love of Christ in his heart and he loves this country and has supported the operations of to pursue truth. But the left doesn't want to hear truth, and corporate America doesn't want to hear truth because they want to enslave this nation under their own designs. So we have a promo code, BARDS, B-A-R-D-S. You can use that on the site at MyPillow. Our focal point is 1 million pair of my slippers sold by August. 1 million pair of my slippers by August 27th. And we're going to want all the patriots to show up and around the world, whether you're showing up or not, to wear your my slippers on that day to celebrate our greatest CEO in this nation right now, Mike Lindell, and all he's doing for this great nation. You can go to MyPillow.com, MyPillow.com. You can also talk to a human being if you want to. You can call an 800 number, 975-2939, 800-975-2939. Use the same promo code, BARDS. And it's not just slippers. There's all sorts of stuff on there, right? There's fantastic products, and I use them. Okay, I have the pillows, I have the sheets, I've got the comforter, I've got the my slippers, I've got the towels. Yeah, I kind of went my pillow crazy. But it's wonderful, and it's great quality products. It's a great American company with a great American CEO. So we need to get behind him. We need to drive as many sales as we can there. We need to use our dollars as a weapon, strategically using them to boost up a great company that's building jobs and supporting freedom and love of God in this nation. If we had 100 of Mike Lindells in this nation, we wouldn't have the problem we have today. But we don't yet. But as patriots, we need to make a statement to everyone out there that that's what we want. Oh, and by the way, at Bards Fest on the Slipper Revolution Day, we're going to announce the 7 lucky winners, chicken dinner, lucky winners, corporations that stabbed us in the back as a nation, and we're going to call for a global boycott of every one of their products and stores. So buckle up. We're going to raise one. The one we're raising is my pillow. We're going to drop 7, and it's the 7 that stabbed us in the back. If you want a clue, go read through all the list of companies that supported illegal voting in Georgia when they tried to do voting reform. By the way, if you're one of those companies, just a fair warning. We're not playing around here. If you're listening, you're working for them, you think you're a senior leadership, you're going to scoff at the Patriots, don't do it anymore. I'm telling you right now, you're getting your warning in these shows each night. We're giving you your warning. Come back to God, come back to this nation, start acting like a company of America. Because when we get through with those 7, we're going to bury them. And I mean it. You're never going to get those sales back. And all we need to do is pull 40% of those sales, and we pull off their margin, and they make no money. End of story. So, Buckle up, Patriots. We got a lot of work to do. Right now, our focus is Mike Lindell, MyPillow, MyPillow.com, Bards promo code. Use it, abuse it, pass it around, share it. If somebody, if somebody's taking the vax, encourage them to get a pillow because they're going to need one to hug when this thing gets really bad. Sorry, I just had to throw that in there. You can give pillows to everybody and go, oh, I'm going to give you my slippers. I don't want my slippers. Well, you're going to need them when you're in the hospital for taking the vax. We can have a little injection humor along with it too. All right, Patriots, you got it. MyPillow.com, Bards code, B-A-R-D-S. And there we go. All right, so without much further ado, Dr. Jim Meehan, just a brilliant mind, a man who has Christ in his heart, passionate about saving lives, making people healthy, passionate about fighting this tyranny. And he has been waging war, starting with the mask mandates all the way through what he's doing now. So I think you'll love this interview. Interview is about an hour long. And so without further ado, let me introduce to you Dr. Jim Meehan. Well, I'm very excited today to have Jim Meehan on with us today. Jim's been instrumental in the early part of this fight in getting mask mandates removed and fighting that, and continues to fight for the freedom of humanity, for that matter. So, Jim, I want to welcome you to the show, and just why don't we start by just kind of giving an introduction to yourself, and we'll kind of take it from there.
Thank you, Scott. It's so great to be here. My name is Jim Meehan. I'm a medical doctor. I began my career training in ophthalmology, so I'm an ophthalmologist by training, but I also then trained in multiple other areas of medicine. And I, for the last 15 some odd years, I've practiced in the area of preventive medicine and the area of preventive medicine. So I got really frustrated with a broken healthcare system that spends a lot of time, money, resources on treating the end stages of disease, when I know that we have the ability, we have the knowledge, we have the resources to prevent disease. But the problem is in medicine is money is not made in preventing diseases. So they don't reimburse for it. You know, all the money is made after the tissue damage has occurred. So that's just not what I went into medicine for. I went into medicine to prevent disease, keep people healthy, help them to choose better, you know, diets, better supplements, better approaches to health and wellness. And so I am a preventive medicine specialist. My superpower, however, kind of comes from my history as being a medical editor of a medical journal. So I used to be one of the editors of the Journal of Ocular Inflammation and Immunology. That's really kind of the focus of my career has been immunology, infectious disease, inflammatory diseases. Inflammation is the cause of all chronic disease in our world, in our country in particular. So in my career as a medical editor, I really learned how to discern, you know, fact from fiction. There's so much fraudulent research in the medical literature, research that is bought and paid for by researchers that depend on grants from the pharmaceutical industry. And if you don't produce what they want, guess what? You don't continue doing research and getting paid by the industry that is really funding most of the research in the world today. And in that process, I just became, you know, I became acutely aware of how much of that fraudulent research is being published, and how much of the important research that should be published is not getting published. One of the stories I like to tell is that early in my career, I was confronted with two studies that came from separate universities, one in Italy, one on the west coast of the United States, that were both showing an association of vaccines to bleeding in the back of children's eyes. And this type of bleeding that was found in the back of children, you know, toddlers' eyes was, you know, considered a cardinal sign for shaken baby syndrome, you know, child abuse. And yet these two studies were showing that there was a really strong, powerful, statistically significant correlation with the reception of a battery of vaccines that children often receive at 12 months of age. So I recommended both of those studies for publication, and they got denied. First time that I had had any of the studies that I had reviewed and recommended denied. So I went to the senior editor and I said, what did I miss? He said, Jim, you didn't miss anything. You just don't know how the game is played. And I said, well, explain that to me. I didn't know we were playing a game with medical science and research. And he said, these two studies, if we were to publish them, cast so much, question on the vaccine program, Merck Pharmaceuticals in particular, that if we were to publish them, you would lose your job. I would lose my job. And it was just a mind-blowing moment, for me to realize that that's how medical science is done in this, in this world, that we would, fail to publish important, compelling science that, asks an important question about the safety of the vaccine program and so on and so forth, simply because a medical editor was afraid of losing his job. A pharmaceutical company that donates, and one of his comments was, Merck donates a lot of money to this university. By the way, that was Washington University in St. Louis, one of the top medical programs, research and training programs in the country. And so that was just, man, that was an eye-opening moment for me that something is really broken and wrong. The medical research that we rely upon is bought and paid for, or it's suppressed because of the narrative that is not supported by industry. So that's Jim Meehan. I'm a fully devoted follower of Christ. My faith is a huge part of the care I deliver. I pray with most of my patients almost every time. I have a medical ministry of treating addiction. It's probably the thing I enjoy the most. I God pulled me into it kicking and screaming because I just thought at one point in my career, those addicts are broken people, that are addicted to pain medicines and anxiety medicines, that there's just something wrong with them, but what God showed me was, no, these are amazing people that the enemy has just, used one of his most powerful weapons against to minimize this, to minimize them, to destroy their purpose, to take them off the path for which they were perfectly created, to destroy relationships and families and careers with dangerous drugs that are being prescribed by my profession. I mean, most opioid addictions began with a medical prescription, from a doctor. That's just the facts. So, everything I've approached in medicine is just, it's been based on science, based on my faith and based on the oath that I've taken as a member of the United States military, as a young cadet at West Point, to a physician that took the Hippocratic oath to do no harm. And I see so much harm being done to my brothers and sisters all over the world. And I've just, God gave me some gifts, some talents, a temperament to bring war to the bad actors in this whole story. And that's what I do every day. I fight from the trenches with science, with debate. I try to fearlessly bring my ideas to the forefront. Unfortunately, many of my ideas are silenced, kicked off Facebook, silenced on Twitter, had my Twitter account deleted. It's just doctors that are speaking, against the narrative, the fabricated, false, fraudulent narrative that's being constructed today about masks, about vaccines, about lockdowns. We've just been absolutely silenced and we have no voice. Thank God for people like you that have created platforms that are speaking to the people. People are hungry for the truth. They see the lies, the fraud, the corruption, the pseudoscience that's being weaponized against them. And it's by people that are simply serving big industry. I mean, look at the Fauci email dump. So much has been exposed by the collusion. Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, he's having more, he's having more discussions with Zuckerberg and Gates than, the scientists that were saying, hey, Tony, I think this looks like a engineered virus. Here's the evidence. It's very solid. Masks don't work. All of this kind of, the science that we've presented and we've been screaming from the mountaintops, hey, listen, people, they're lying to us. We now realize that Anthony Fauci has been lying to the American public. I think the man's got blood on his hands. And it's people like that that need to be held accountable. So I appreciate the opportunity to be on your podcast, which I know is growing like crazy, because people are seeking the truth. And they're, I think especially faith-filled Christians and people of faith, that the Spirit is telling them, hey, something is really dark here. And I think there is a lot of darkness. I think this is spiritual warfare, and I'm just here to fight it.
Jim, you were really instrumental in getting some mask mandates removed. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I've known a lot about masks. I'm a surgeon by training. I've done over 10,000 procedures and operating suites. I've suffered the effects of wearing masks. I was very clear on the science. You know, the wearing of surgical masks has been shown by the Cochrane Collaboration, which used to be one of the most independent, evidence-based kind of overwatchers and overseers of truth in science for many years. And they've studied this issue: do surgical masks prevent wound infections? The answer is no, that they don't. They don't prevent, you know, they're not a good mechanism of source control. So I'd reviewed many of those studies in 2012 and 2014 that had concluded that surgical masks don't protect surgical patients from wound infections. And then so I wasn't surprised when Fauci and Dr. Adams, the Surgeon General, the CDC, the World Health Organization in February and early March were saying, yeah, don't wear surgical, don't wear masks. They won't block this virus. You know, we had 100 years of science that said that masks don't, stop small respiratory viruses like influenza and presumably SARS-CoV-2, because it's about the same size and has many of the same transmission characteristics. But then they flip-flopped, 180-degree course change, and they started recommending masks. And I was like, wait, that doesn't fly with the science. Where's the new science? There must be some. Like everybody else, I was kind of trusting our public health authorities to have a full grasp of the science before they made such important recommendations to the population. So I went looking, and I couldn't find anything. Nothing that supported this, masking healthy people in the population. That made no sense. So I did a complete review of the science, everything I could find. I pulled out all my medical editor skills, discernment of the science, knowledge of, there's different levels of evidence. And, the highest level of medical research evidence is a meta-analysis or a systemic review of multiple randomized controlled trials. Now, I took all of those high-level pieces of science, and I put them all together, and I said, absolutely, masks do not, they don't work to block these respiratory viruses. And in fact, the science clearly says these masks can cause harm, and I outlined 17 ways that mask can cause harm, blocking oxygen, causing you to rebreathe CO2, to breathe your own oral bacteria deep down into your, into your airways and into your lungs, that causes bacterial pneumonias. I predicted the rise in bacterial pneumonias that we are seeing in the population. And in fact, the science from 1918 forward, the Spanish flu, had shown that masks were a huge part of the bacterial pneumonias that were responsible for many, if not most, of the deaths from that influenza pandemic of 1918. So we had all this science that says, this is, don't mask the population, it won't work. It's why we had never used masks for any other pandemics or epidemics for influenza, none previously. And we shouldn't be doing them now. And I put that out there. I put it on my blog page. I put it on social media, and it gained a little bit of virality. People were using it. They were referencing it. It was one place you could go that had, all of the evidence kind of curated. And there were many others that were doing the same thing. And so we, our voices were clearly showing, here's the science. And then here's the CD. I also kind of debunked a lot of the CDC science. They had about 72 studies that were all weak, I call it a steaming pile of absolute low level crap. It's just, excuse my language, but it was just a steaming pile of low level science, and I'm talking about observational retrospective studies. Those are down at the bottom of the pyramid of evidence, way below the high level evidence that I was presenting. They were citing mannequin studies where you put a mask on a mannequin, doesn't move, doesn't change its, doesn't break the seal like a human does when they move their head and talk and everything else. It was also studies like the infamous hamster cage study where they were putting a surgical mask over a hole between two hamster cages. You know, that's interesting science, but it's experimental and it's not real world. You know, real world mask wearing is complex. It has problems with how long you wear the mask, how much you touch the mask. I think we were all aware that people wearing masks in the population were wearing them improperly. They weren't fit. They were, touching them frequently, contaminating them. If you wear a surgical mask and, for several hours, it accumulates bacteria, your own oral bacteria, plus all the bacteria that you come in contact with and you touch and you contaminate that mask with. And then guess what? That stuff starts to grow on that warm, moist interface of that mask. And before you know it, you've got a petri dish of nightmarish fungi, bacteria, viruses that you, then when you put that mask back on your face after you threw it on the car seat or the kitchen counter where you cut chicken the night before. And before you know it, you've got a medical catastrophe sitting right there on your mouth, breathing that stuff deep down into your lungs. And what you started to see in the epidemiologic science, the science of seeing what was actually happening in the population. Some of the stuff that was published at rationalground.com, they did they took all the data from the various data sets all over the world, and they showed that every place that you started locking down and putting masks on people, hard masking people with mandates, you started to see an increase in hospitalizations and deaths. We all predicted that, Scott. We predicted that would happen because of the harms of masks. We predicted that we would see worsening of disease in the population. I always say one of the worst things that you can do, especially with a virus like SARS-CoV-2 that easily transmits, rapidly transmits, blows through that mask and around the edges of the mask, gets into your airways. And if you're forced to wear a mask throughout your day and you've got SARS-CoV-2 brewing in your lungs, replicating, you're exhaling that. It's being those infectious viral particles are captured on the inside of that mask. Where do they go, Scott? Well, some of them go right through the mask. Some of them go right around of it, but a lot of it goes right back into your lungs. That increases viral load. That makes that mask a dangerous intervention that will make your disease worse. It'll turn an asymptomatic or mild case of COVID-19 into a dangerous, severe, or even lethal case of COVID-19. And that's what we saw happening in the population. Increased hospitalizations, increased deaths, and then lots of people suffering, and especially our children. You know, that was the thing that really got me involved in this is I saw that we started masking younger and younger children that are less capable of managing a mask of any form. You know, they suffer under it, they fidget with it, they touch it, they chew on it. Children are the worst. They just can't tolerate wearing masks. And here we were forcing children to wear masks in school. Children that were at almost, statistically zero risk of dying of COVID-19, children that in studies all over the world, in schools all over the world, were being shown to not be transmitters of the virus in school. Schools were actually one of the safest places for not transmitting COVID-19. We showed it in Austria and Germany and Sweden, North Carolina. Studies, high-level, well-controlled studies all over the world were showing there was no need to mask children in schools. And then we later, as this pandemic, we found out that the CDC knew that it wasn't effective, but they were being lobbied by the American Federation of Teachers, right? So lobbyists, interest groups, leftist organizations, quite honestly, were lobbying the CDC and changing their policy. They weren't following science. It was all about politics. And meanwhile, our children were being harmed. Kids were, you know, having rashes on their face. Their dental health was declining. They were getting bacterial pneumonias, chronic sore throats, and worse, you know, even worse than all those medical problems was the fact that these children were truly suffering psychosocial injury. You know, you got five-year-old children that are being indoctrinated in their schools, teachers yelling at them to pull up their mask. If you don't, you're going to kill your classmates. You're going to die of this horrible disease. You're going to kill me. And you got these kids, and there's a court case going on right now of a five-year-old that was terrified to take his mask off even at home. He wanted to wear it all the time because he had been so terrified into believing that if he took off his mask, he was going to kill his parents and his teachers and his classmates. That is dangerous. The psychosocial trauma that this has caused, we're going to be paying that cost for many years to come.
That sort of trauma on a child, as we both know, doesn't go away, and it exceeds even what we would call abuse. We're almost going to need a new definition for that.
That's right.
With that, now we're seeing this new push of vaccines. Well, we're not a vaccine. It's an injection. It doesn't even qualify as a vaccine, but what they're calling a vaccine.
It's gene therapy.
And we're seeing this push to get this in, and everything we learn about this, it just keeps getting worse. What's actually in this, what it's composed of, what they're not telling us. What are your thoughts on this, Jim?
My goodness. It's number one, it's not a vaccine. They fraudulently mislabeled it so that it could be considered, you know, the population has been indoctrinated to believe that vaccines are safe and effective. I often state, and I will state in any court, any time, any place, that the science is not there to say that vaccines are safe and effective. Not one of them. They have not done the high level studies with placebo controls to be able to earn that statement. Vaccines are safe and effective. It's no less true with the COVID-19 vaccine. This is number one. It's not a vaccine. It's gene therapy. They are delivering a genetic therapy. It's an experimental therapy that has not completed clinical trials. We don't know what the long-term, side effects are going to be. And we don't know, we've never created a successful coronavirus vaccine. We have been unable to create a coronavirus vaccine because every time we tried in 2003 through 2012 for SARS-CoV-1, if you want to, you know, the original SARS, for MERS, the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome virus, and every attempt to create a vaccine for these coronavirus-like viruses has failed because when they vaccinated the test animals, and then they exposed those test animals to the wild type virus, they created this exuberant, deadly cytokine storm upon re-exposure to the virus. The vaccinated animals died, their lungs melted, their tissues were so inflamed that there was just massive destruction. Almost every one of the vaccinated animals died. Now, they never determine, and we call that antibody-dependent enhancement. Different, it goes by different terms. It's a pathogenic priming of the immune system that this coronavirus family seems to exert, and we never figured out how to counter it. And then we warp speed into this new COVID-19 vaccine programs with these gene therapies that are going to do the same thing. We haven't proven otherwise because they skipped the animal studies. The animals in this study are the human animals. We have all been turned into lab rats, and nobody can tell you what the long-term effects are, but I can tell you what the short-term effects are, and they're frightening. Right now in the VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, a system that is intentionally broken. It was created from the 1986 law as a surveillance system. It's really cumbersome. It's hard for doctors to report to. Harvard studied this in 2010 and found that system of surveillance, this database, captures 1% of all vaccine injuries. So here, what we have, but yet what we have in this broken system right now is 329,021 reports of vaccine injury. We have 5,888 deaths reported in that system. The number of life-threatening reports, that's 5,885, 2,190 heart attacks. The numbers keep going up every day. I had to refresh it on my screen, and my heart broke because 1,000 more in almost every category has appeared in just the 2 days since I refreshed it last. Vaccine injuries, vaccine deaths from COVID-19 vaccines are well beyond any rate that we should be tolerating. 5,888 deaths is orders of magnitude higher than the deaths that we saw with the 2009 swine flu vaccines, the bird flu vaccines that were creating so many deaths that we shut down the program. But what are we doing here? What are we doing today in this moment in history? We are ignoring these deaths. The mainstream media is absolutely suppressing public awareness of how many people are being injured and dying. And we're, you know, marching, we're warp speeding into getting it into every arm of our children even. So they're talking about, you know, 12 to 18 year old children. My goodness, we're killing the adults. Let's not start killing the children now. And the signal of myocarditis and thrombocytopenia in myocarditis in young men and thrombocytopenia and clotting disorders in young women, it's off the charts. The signal is well beyond calling for an immediate cessation into the vaccine program, and they just keep marching forward because it has nothing to do with science. It has nothing to do with public health. It has everything to do with a very large and powerful industry, the pharmaceutical industry, that is determined to make trillions of dollars by, you know, buying lawmakers, passing laws, mandating, you know, vaccines, getting this vaccine passport system, coercing you into getting a dangerous experimental vaccine into your arm because you want to travel, because you want to leave the state, or you want to go to a concert. That, you know, when I see this all happening, I'm just, you know, I can see what's happening. It's all about big business, big money, profits, and greed. And the public is not being told the whole truth about their medical decision-making, their intellect, their humanity is being denied, and they're not being given informed consent. They should be being told of the risks, the benefits, the alternatives. And this becomes most acute when you consider the younger members of our population, where the risk of COVID-19 is statistically zero. And they're at a greater risk of dying or being injured by this vaccine than they are of having a severe case or a deadly case of COVID-19. The risk-benefit analysis does not favor vaccination in these populations. And yet we're just headlong, you know, charging into this nightmare of injury that I just can't support. I got to call it out for what it is. It is not medical science. It is big business and greed.
We have part of this problem as well as the willful compliance with people themselves. This thing is still has an option, and it's amazing to me. And I mean, you mentioned you're in the military, as was I, and it's a stunning thing to me to watch the public so willfully comply to what is a choice. I mean, it's not mandated, and yet they're being leveraged. What are your thoughts on that, Jim?
Well, there's several parts of that. Number one, they're not being told the full story. They're ethical and legal, the ethical and legal obligation for doctors, for the vaccine manufacturers to fully inform the recipients or the people considering vaccination. They're not being told the full risk. They should be told, you know, there is a risk, you know, Mr. 21-year-old, you know, there's a risk that your heart could become inflamed, that this spike protein, which is increasingly being shown in the medical science to be a inflammatory toxin in the human body, that the vaccine, the mRNA vaccines, the adenovirus vaccines like Johnson & Johnson, that these viruses payload by in and of itself could create an inflammatory disease process of vasculitis and encephalitis or heart inflammation in that young man that could ruin his life forever. You know, we have so many cases of that being presented in, you know, some of the alternative media, but they're not being given that full awareness, that full risk benefit and alternative discussion. So they can't make an informed decision. That's number one. Number two, we have just the nature of, you know, good people, even good people, to make bad decisions because they just want to conform to societal norms. I mean, you know, the German, lots of good German people, were complicit in atrocities during the Holocaust because they just wanted to, you know, conform to authority. Authority figures were telling them what to do. Anthony Fauci is an authority figure that is telling people lies and, you know, anti-science nonsense, and they're simply following those dictates without thinking about them. Now, there was everybody should understand the history of the Milgram experiment. Stanley Milgram in the 1960s was trying to understand, well, why did so many Germans were they so complicit in atrocities in the Holocaust? And so he did the Milgram experiment, and he's a Yale sociologist. And what he did is he basically took a test subject and determined how many of these test subjects would shock to 450 volts their fellow human being. And they had an actor on the other side of a wall, and they, you know, every time they got a question wrong, the test subject would increase the shock and all the way up to 450 volts of electrical, and the actor would cry out in pain, and at one point even, you know, falls to the ground. You hear a thud, and they were trying to determine, you know, how, to what extremes would a human being harm and injure another human being if an authority figure told him to continue the experiment. And that authority figure, by the way, was a doctor-like authority figure in a white coat that would tell him, keep doing it. And the Milgram experiment determined about 67% of people would do atrocious things. So they would shock that actor to 450 volts if they were told to do so by an authority figure. So here we are in the modern age, that we are being Milgram experimented. We have probably more than 2/3 of the population have demonstrated that they'll put a mask that causes harm on themselves. They'll line up to get a vaccine. They'll lock themselves in their homes trying to hide from a respiratory virus. They'll shut down their businesses. I mean, they have just marched like lemmings to the edge of a cliff in this situation. And it's so disconcerting to see so many of our, you know, our fellow citizens not, you know, not doing their own research, not questioning this authority. Cause, you know, this, we've determined Anthony Fauci is not just incompetent, he's malevolent. What he was telling us to do, he knew was wrong, and he did it anyway, because, you know, well, I don't know. I can't put myself in the mind of that kind of evil, but I think there is definitely some malevolence here. And I just, you know, I'm going to stand and oppose it and call it out. Fauci shouldn't just lose his job. He shouldn't just be fired. He should be held in contempt. He perjured himself before Rand Paul. He should be in prison. He might even need to be hung for treason. That's how bad his, you know, he was aiding and abetting an enemy that was developing bioweapons at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. That is an engineered bioweapon. You can claim it escaped. You can claim whatever you wanted. But if you look at how everything has played out, there is a big plan behind all this. This isn't just happenstance and circumstance and, you know, bad actors adjusting to the circumstances. Man, this looks like there was a big plan behind all of it. And I think there's enough evidence from Event 201 to the SPARS documents to give us indication that this is a plan of a malevolence. And I think it's spiritual warfare. There's a lot of evil on that side, and it's time for all of us to rise up and oppose it. Lock shields, plant our feet, and hold back this invading horde before they damage any more of our brothers, sisters, fathers, and mothers.
So true. Dr. Lee Merritt pointed something out in an interview I did with her recently, which is, to your point of how big this is that the lab testing on the PCR tests, this stated number of sequences is no more than 25, and yet every single lab did over 40. As she pointed out, it's like you only come to one of two conclusions. either they all made the same judgment error or they all were instructed to do just that.
Yeah, they were all instructed to do just that. Our FDA set up that. I mean, that's the cycle threshold issue with a PCR test. You know, Kerry Mullis, the inventor of the PCR testing, said, you know, he specifically told Anthony Fauci, you're doing it wrong. This is being used improperly. My test that I invented is being used improperly. When you amplify the marker segment 40 to 45 times here in Oklahoma, it was 40 to 45 times every lab in the country. And I was like, what in the world? That's going to be false positive, like over 95% of the time. And so I went and I tried to find out, I asked some of the lab directors, where is this coming from? Why are you guys running this at 40 to 45 cycle thresholds? I want you to run it at, you know, 22. And they said, we can't do that, Dr. Meehan. The FDA requirement on this is that we run it at 40 cycle thresholds. Every laboratory in the country is doing it at 40 to 45 cycle thresholds. That was intentionally put in place to create a casedemic, to exaggerate the cases in the population. We were misusing a scientific PCR test to create and artificially inflate the numbers so that it would look worse than it was.
It's insane. You're a man of faith. One of the things I talk about a lot in the podcast is that when we take faith and God out of our country, we end up with a lot of poor decisions that are based on me and fear rather than centering first on God in this. And that seems to be a driving piece here that I think as a nation we're going to have to reflect upon, especially and we look at how many people have chased after this injection to find a solution to their fear rather than turning to God. What are your thoughts on that, Jim?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, the enemy is, we can never underestimate the intelligence and the strategery of the enemy, Satan. He is a terrible actor. And I see his hand all over what's been happening here. You know, one of the big issues that I've been very vocal about is the use of aborted fetal cells in our vaccine. You know, I think we've been defiling the bodies of our children with vaccines, live virus vaccines that are grown on aborted fetal cell lines. And a lot of people say, well, yeah, Dr. Meehan, there's no aborted fetal cells in our vaccines. And I will say, yeah, there's no full whole aborted fetal cells in the vaccines. It's the DNA microfragments. You know, the way these things are made, Scott, the MMR, the rubella portion of the MMR vaccine, the chickenpox vaccine, Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine, these are all grown on aborted fetal cells, children that were aborted. The COVID-19 vaccine from Johnson & Johnson or Janssen is grown on a fetus that was aborted in 1985. I think it was 18 weeks of gestation. And then it was captured in a saline bag, immediately taken to the vivisection table where its tissues were harvested, never anesthetized. It was ripped apart so that its retinal tissue could become the cell line that this adenovirus material is grown on. The chickenpox vaccine, the rubella vaccine, these viruses grow best on human cells. They replicate in that human cell and then they burst forth and the cell is destroyed in that process. But what is left behind is a slurry, a toxic soup of the residual cellular proteins, the DNA microfragments, that's all in that. It's being injected into our children and into into the population now with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. These are human antigens. They're right on the package insert. It's listed there how many nanograms of this stuff, and it is not inconsequential. In fact, the chickenpox vaccine that's administered to children has twice as much of this human DNA and residual cellular proteins as it has the varicella proteins, the varicella antigens. It's right on the package insert, ladies and gentlemen. This is an issue that I've debated pediatricians and scientists all over the country, and they scream at me, oh, Dr. Meehan, you're making that up. And then I pull out the package insert for the varicella, the chickenpox vaccine, and I said, right here, it's right here in the package insert. Now I want you to read that, and then I want you to rebut the fact, and I want you to take back the fact that you and admit you just don't know because you never did the research. Well, I did the research. It's an absolute verifiable fact. And these, you know, these human antigens taken from a child that was sacrificed at the moment of their delivery into the world, to me, it's satanic. It's tantamount to a satanic ritual. And it's, I think that the enemy has deceived the population and science and the cult of scientism that science has become all over the world into deceiving us into defiling our bodies with this, you know, with these tissues of children that were sacrificed. What does that sound like to you, Scott? Does that sound like, you know, great science? Does that sound like we could be possibly being be deceived by the, you know, the enemy? And we're doing something that's so horrific that if people really knew what's happening, they would rise up against it. But they don't want to tell you this, and they deny it all the time because they either don't know, they're incompetent, or they don't want the public to know because they're malevolent. What are your thoughts? Did you know that we are injecting our children and that the COVID-19 Johnson & Johnson Janssen vaccine is defiling our bodies with human DNA from an aborted fetus?
Yes, I did. That's one of the things. I'm so anti this injection. I talk about every aspect I can find about it.
Good.
Including the Moderna component of this is their whole philosophy, which is DNA is the hardware, mRNA is the software.
Yeah.
And they now see themselves as the deliverer of the new software of life.
Or death.
It's an unbelievable concept when you think that you're literally turning God's creation over to a corporation to update your DNA at their will.
Yeah, and it could be, very well could be, the software of death. You know, that's the problem, is I think it's very clear, it's emerging in the science that we chose the wrong target. If you wanted to create an effective vaccine, well, we chose the wrong target. That programming, you know, injecting software into our bodies to turn our bodies into spike protein production factories for a few weeks or forever, because that can happen. There's a non-zero probability that the mRNA can be inserted by retroviruses and retrovirus pieces into our DNA. But to turn our bodies into production factors for spike proteins was a huge mistake. We are now seeing that the spike protein by itself can bind to the ACE2 receptor and stimulate a multi-system inflammatory disease, that it can create vasculitis, encephalitis. It doesn't stay at the injection site like they want us, that like they keep telling us that it will. Biodistribution studies that were FOIA requested, you know, public record requested out of Japan, has shown that the lipid nanoparticles and the spike protein is being distributed throughout the body. It's concentrating in the brain, the adrenal glands, and the ovaries, and all the tissues of the body, large amounts in the liver, large amounts in the kidney. This spike protein is itself a toxin. And so we, you know, we're turning everybody into a software delivered toxin producing nightmare that could be a depopulation event in the coming months. In the short term, it's creating severe systemic diseases and too many people. It's killing way too many, 5,888. And again, I remind you that may be 1% of what is actually happening out there. It might be 50%. If it's where it is not right now at 5,888 is too many people dying from this experimental vaccine. But if it's some, you know, order of magnitude higher than that, this is a nightmare waiting to happen. It's, again, it's already far more than we've ever seen. In fact, the COVID-19 vaccines, the deaths from COVID-19 vaccines is exceeding all of the other vaccines in 30 years. That's what the VAERS data is currently showing us. And I think we're capturing a fraction of it. Data out of the CMS, of some stuff being published now by Steve Kirsch and others, is showing that we're probably, the CMS data is suggesting that it's about 25,000 deaths.
Wow. So in this crisis that we're in, and with the road ahead, and you pointed it out, you're one of many that are pointing to the potential storm of death, quite frankly, that we're facing with this injection. What would you say to people? I mean, this is a heavy thing to take in a society.
Right. It is.
And it's a very hard thing. And I'm noticing it a lot in the Patriot movement and within the faith movement. It's very difficult to process that sort of malevolence. What is your thoughts on that to people? What would you say?
Well, number one, for those people that have been vaccinated, you know, we've got to start preparing for what could come. Are they going to develop a pathogenic priming, an antibody-dependent enhancement? When these vaccinated individuals come in contact with the wild-type virus, which they will at some point, are they going to melt their lung tissue and die or be severely injured? You know, scientists and experts, and, you know, if we had a public health authority, if we had a CDC that was working for the public interest, they would be preparing for this. They would be anticipating, they'd be doing something. We should be telling people, you probably need to protect yourself. At some point, here's what the message should be. If I was in control, it's like, we made a mistake. The spike protein is the wrong target. We need to protect those that have been vaccinated because they're producing a spike protein that in and of itself is dangerous. I think one of the best countermeasures to both SARS-CoV-2, the wild type virus, and the vaccine damage could possibly be ivermectin. Ivermectin is a very safe and effective anti-parasitic drug that has been repurposed for the, in the words of Dr. Pierre Corey, the preeminent expert on COVID and ivermectin, says it's the most broad spectrum potent antiviral on the planet. I've treated over 1,000 patients with it. Ivermectin is a lifesaver. It blocks the virus from binding to the ACE2 receptors. If the spike protein is going to create inflammatory disease in a portion of the population that has been vaccinated, we probably need to start treating them with ivermectin. They need anti-inflammatories. And in fact, one of the mechanism of action of ivermectin is its potent anti-inflammatory effect. It concentrates in the tissues of the body, and it exerts this powerful anti-inflammatory effect as well as its blocking effect of the virus. But we probably need to start preparing these people for the cytokine storm that they could develop should they come in contact with the virus. We should, and that's the other issue that should be discussed here. We don't need a vaccine when we've got a very safe, low cost, highly effective treatment like ivermectin, Scott. This, you know, the biggest tragedy of this pandemic has been the suppression of the public awareness and the medical establishment's awareness and recognition that ivermectin is an incredibly effective and safe treatment, that this low cost medication that is, you know, safe enough to give to 6-month-old children, safe enough to take once a week for many years, as it is often used in many countries of the world, third world countries where it's over the counter, that we could have prevented about 70% of the deaths that have occurred from this pandemic if we were properly using ivermectin, either as a preventative or as an early treatment, where you take it out of the medicine cabinet at the first signs of flu or cold-like symptoms, and you start taking ivermectin to block that virus, to put out the fires of inflammation and to protect patients. That 70% number, the decrease in mortality of 70%, that comes from 58 clinical trials, 29 randomized controlled trials, and 3 meta-analyses of the data. The highest levels of science say that ivermectin reduces mortality by 70%. Imagine that, I don't know what the number is, 3.6 million people that have died of COVID-19 could have been saved by ivermectin. I have no financial interest in ivermectin. I don't think anybody has. It's off patent. You know, it's just a old medicine that works incredibly effectively against multiple viruses, including SARS-CoV-2.
It's also didn't catch the media wrath that HCQ received.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's more evidence of the evil and malevolence that's going on here. HCQ is a very effective medicine as well. But what happened, you had a couple of doctors, Dr. Desai at Surgisphere that fabricated 97,000 data points, supposedly from 122 hospitals all over the world. And that famous Lancet article that claimed that hydroxychloroquine caused, you know, fatal heart arrhythmias in the study population. The public needs to understand that was absolute fraudulent science. When it was published, the independent peer reviewers like myself, we dug into that data. We said, first of all, how in the world, any of us that have done any of these kind of research studies know that aggregating 97,000 patients from 122 hospitals all over the world, that takes months, if not years. And supposedly Surgisphere did that in a couple of months. That's impossible. So we started going out trying to find the hospitals. You know, Desai and Surgisphere wouldn't release the data. They were hiding that behind locked doors, which is the first sign that something's not right here. Make a long story short, it became very clear in about 2 weeks that was absolute fabricated data. It was science fiction meant to assassinate hydroxychloroquine, to discredit it, so that the vaccine business model could be maintained and sustained. That was, again, profits over science. And then what it was even worse was what followed that. It's that what I'm laying out here, Scott, is the pattern of behavior, the strategies that are often employed to discredit, a low cost therapeutic like vitamin D, vitamin C, or ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine to, you know, support the alternative business model, the vaccine business model, for example. And what followed was the World Health Organization convenes a committee. They want to create two studies called the Recovery and the Solidarity Studies. And they combined a committee to design these experiments, these randomized controlled trials. And who's on it? Who's sitting on the committee? Four members of the Gates Foundation, two members of Gilead Pharmaceuticals, the makers of remdesivir, multiple pharmaceutical industries were sitting on that design committee. And what did they design? They designed studies that were designed to murder the test subjects, because what they designed was a hydroxychloroquine arm that overdosed the patients by 5 to 6 times the therapeutic dose. They literally overdosed the test subjects that were going to be receiving hydroxychloroquine by 5 to 6 times. They should have gotten 400 milligrams. They were being given 2,000 to 2,400 milligrams of hydroxychloroquine. You know, the dose is, the poison is kind of determined by the dose. You know, the dose was so high that it was guaranteed to fail. They designed the study, in my opinion, intentionally to fail, to further discredit the hydroxychloroquine. Meanwhile, we have hundreds of studies from other locations, and everybody can go to C19, C like cat, 19ivermectin.com. That's a website that aggregates all the data on ivermectin. It's also, there's tabs there for hydroxychloroquine. And if you go there, I'm clicking on it right now, and you will find that for hydroxychloroquine, there have been 256 trials. 4,103 scientists and over 384,000 patients. The aggregate of that shows a 66% improvement in early treatment with hydroxychloroquine, meaning 66% of patients have 66% decrease in duration and severity of disease when hydroxychloroquine is used. That's 75% improvement in duration and severity when it's used in early treatment, and it reduces mortality by about 70%. You know, this is the data that we had to gain from independent sources, 256 trials all over the country, independent doctors and scientists that said, wait a second, the Solidarity, the recovery trial, this Lancet study, that was fabricated nonsense. That was dangerous, you know, anti-science, false narrative creation. We're going to do our own studies because we believe, you know, based on the mechanistic studies and the other information that we have, this could be life-saving. And we got nothing else. There are no vaccines at this point, right? So we're treating people with hydroxychloroquine, and we're seeing them improve rapidly. We're seeing people that are on the edge of, you know, minutes from being ventilated, starting to recover in our hospitals. when hydroxychloroquine was deployed. But we also saw a huge barrier to its use because you had, you know, that lie of the Lancet study was halfway around the world before the truth of its fraudulence, you know, got out of the gate. But we have these safe therapeutics that are being destroyed, you know, are trying to be destroyed by, you know, bad actors and big industries that are trying to support their vaccine business model that would be eliminated and should be eliminated because we have much safer 40 plus years of safety history with drugs like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine that would eliminate the emergency use authorization. That's the whole issue here, is if ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine work as effectively as they have been shown in these meta-analyses, then we must call for an immediate cessation to the experimental use authorization of the COVID-19 vaccines.
So as we kind of wrap this up, we're in a very challenging moment right here. We have a medical industry to a large degree that has just turned its back on the public. And then we have doctors like you on the front line of truth and saving lives, as you pointed out, and healing people. What are your thoughts for people out here that are having to make that decision? That discernment's difficult. And the trust is being so deeply broken. Where are we going? And what would you say for this weeks, days, months ahead?
Well, you can't trust the public health establishment. They have been lying to us consistently throughout this. You can only trust God. You got to recognize that, you know, that your enemy is, it is a spiritual warfare. The enemy is Satan, and he's got too many people in his, you know, and he's got strongholds of greed and just malevolence and too many of these bad actors. I think that you have to, you know, pray God into this world. You got to pray his power. You know, we were told that we could move mountains with our faith. We need to become those prayer warriors. No matter who you are and what you do, the power of your prayer is far superior to my medical experience or any of the other, you know, skills and resources that other people think may be valuable in this fight. Nothing is more valuable than prayer. Pray for those of us that are fighting on the front lines, because you are the armor. Your prayers are so powerful in protecting us. You know, I sometimes look at my life and fighting the opioid industry, the vaccine industry, the pharmaceutical industry, and what's going on right now, and think, how in the world have I survived this? How has the medical board not attacked me? How is the, you know, how have the bad actors not really tried to just crush me with their power and their money? And I know it's because of the power of prayer. I know I'm protected. I pray for people like Dell Bigtree and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I pray for you, Scott, and your powerful voice that's moving so many people to the truth. But it all comes down to prayer. Get on your knees, do the knee work, and pray for this time and this time in history, because this is the rise of evil. We're paying a terrible cost. We've allowed evil to proliferate because we've murdered too many babies on the, you know, and abortions. God has been removed from our schools and from too much of our society. We are the nation that chose God. We are the nation that developed a plan that we were under God, one nation under God, and we've got to become that nation again. Prayer warriors, rise up everywhere, get on those knees, and pray protection everywhere we can. Pray for God's intervention to strike down this evil, to expose the fraud, the corruption, the pseudoscience, to hold accountable the bad actors that are just from greed or whatever motives they may have, that God just end that, lift up his people, support his people, and become a nation under God again.
Amen. Well, Jim, we always close the program with a prayer, and if it's okay with you, I'd like to lead a prayer.
Absolutely. Please do, my brother.
Heavenly Father, we are so blessed today to have Jim Meehan here with us to share the truth, to open more eyes, and to guide more people to your love and to your guidance. Lord, we pray for this power of healing, for the rise of faith in this nation, and the power of Christ in people's hearts to open their eyes to truth, to lead them to truth, and to give them the power of discernment in the face of this evil. Most importantly, Lord, we pray for prayers. Prayer warriors to get on their knees and fight from our knees to push back on this evil that has managed to work its way into our nation so that we can truly reset this nation on that foundation of faith and in the words, in God we trust. And we say these things in Christ's holy name. Amen.
Amen. That is an awesome prayer, Scott. I love it.
Thank you very much, Jim. It is a pleasure to have you on. Thank you very much for being on here today. It's just been an absolute pleasure. What a great conversation, and it's just going to help people once again to really get the context of what we're dealing with. Your knowledge is immense, and your passion is just, you're a patriot. So thank you so much.
So good to be here, Scott. God bless you. Thank you for having me. And I just go forward inspired by that prayer. I'm going to replay it every day for the next, you know, until we win this fight. Because that's the kind of prayer that stiffens my spine and gives me courage to continue this fight.
Well, thank you very much. Have a very blessed day.
You too.
So, Patriots, that was Dr. Jim Meehan. What a patriot. And a man of God, and a doctor who doesn't see his profession as a way to work with anything other than the hands of God, the gifts that gave him to heal people and to bring the healing, not just in the physical, but the spiritual. This is a time that we have to truly be focused on our gifts and talents. Dr. Meehan has his gifts and talents before him, and he's using every bit of them to fight this fight. And I hope each of these interviews inspires us all to reach higher, to strive further, and to go deeper, taking whatever gifts and talents you have. That's what God put us here for. And this is why we have to fight this fight the way God wants us to fight. And it's so many multidimensional that we can't conceive it, but God can. And God has placed this army out here to fight this evil in a perfect army, an army that has so many vectors to hit the enemy with that the enemy can't keep a footing, and that we'll take it away from it, and in the end, we will win with God. But it's going to take the persistence, and it's going to take the prayers, and this fight begins on our knees before God, and we're praying for this nation, praying for the healing of this nation, the forgiveness. We have murdered so many unborn children. It is sickening what we've done. And on top of that, if that isn't enough, then as we continue to learn about what the pharmaceutical industry is doing and what the food industry is doing, buying baby parts, putting fetal cells in things, growing stuff in petri dishes with fetal cell bases, babies that have been destroyed, not just in aborted babies, but vivisections. I mean, this is Dr. Mengele times beyond anything we've ever imagined. These people are sick. And we are dealing with an organization that has managed to put itself deep within the very fabric of every aspect of our society. And worse yet, they have 50% of this public completely convinced that everything, all of this is normal. That aborting a child is normal because it's a choice. Taking a vaccine is normal, because it's the only way to protect yourself. I mean, it's just nonsense. So our real mission, between the prayers of healing, are also the courage to step into this world and confront this evil and to awaken the many. We have to do that. That's not, as you've heard me say, this isn't an option. This is our duty in this army, in this war. And we have to continue to push truth out before us. So take these encouragements. These are frontline fighters, and we need to be right there with them. We need to be supporting them. We need to be doing our part in our local community. And each and every one of us is vital in this fight. Each and every prayer is critical in this fight. So keep your head up and your eyes forward. Never bow to evil. Never relent. Always press in. This enemy wants you to cower back. Don't. Press in fearlessly. Do not hesitate. This is time now to take it on the offensive. And as we do, press in hard, challenge people for their thinking, force them to question. There's a prayer warrior I know that today went out and challenged in the last 2 days, has taken on the principal at the high school where they're doing injection stations, taken on single-handedly the school board, challenged them with facts about the age limit on the vaccine, the quote-unquote vaccine, the injection, challenged them on the facts, put even in their face, all of them, that they're all going to face Nuremberg trials, and has even intercepted the one of the people running the injection site today, stopped them in the process of doing a prayer walk around the high school, stopped them, confronted them, and forced them to admit through questions that they didn't agree with everything. This is the power of God working. We need 10,000 of her right now, 10,000. And in doing that, to get out into these injection sites, to get in the face of school boards, to get in the face of politicians, to get in the face of sheriffs, and let them know this is not going to happen. And when we have that courage, because God is with us there, he's not going to forsake you. This is time to stand boldly. Don't hesitate. And that's part of bringing the victory of God to life. This is the Lord's war, and we're in the Lord's army. And that's Lord with all caps, which means God, Yahshua. So let's get busy. All right, so have a very blessed evening. I'll see you this evening at 9 p.m. for Fishers of Men, and it's midnight Eastern. So until then, or until the next time, God bless, and out for now.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
Every thoughtful citizen who despairs of war and wishes to bring peace should begin by looking inward, by examining his own attitude towards the possibilities of peace. Too many of us think it is impossible. Too many think it is unreal. But that is a dangerous, defeatist belief. It leads to the conclusion that war is inevitable, that mankind is doomed, that we are gripped by forces we cannot control. We need not accept that view. Our problems are man-made, therefore they can be solved by man, and man can be as big as he wants. No problem of human destiny is beyond human beings. Man's reason and spirit have often solved the seemingly unsolvable, and we believe they can do it again. Surely the opening vistas of space promise high costs and hardships, as well as high reward. So it is not surprising that some would have us stay where we are a little longer, to rest, to wait. But this city of Houston, this state of Texas, this country of the United States was not built by those who waited and rested and wished to look behind them. This country was conquered by those who move forward, and so will space. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept.
The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Has waited thousands of years to show its face. It has only one intent, to destroy God's light and to enslave. It has no scruples. It has no rules but one, to win at any cost. But we will never bow, for we are the remnant that will hold the line. This is war. We fight. We push. We climb. We never give in. We become the nightmare that evil didn't know could exist. We pray. We stand. We live by the words, "In God we trust." We fear nothing. We are the light that can never be extinguished. We are patriots. We are the digital army that will help deliver God's wrath.